Hey everyone, I have a new podcast recommendation for you. First Day Back is a really great, unique podcast about people returning from the hardest experiences of their lives. Last season was about a woman coming back from prison for shooting her own husband. And this new season is all about a comedian who literally died on stage and then came back to life. And he really did die. His heart stopped for 5 minutes. So make sure you check out First Day Back in your podcast app now, and then subscribe so you won't miss an episode. That's First Day Back. The following 911 call came in at about 7:45 p.m. on Wednesday, September 2nd, 2015.
Hi, someone just got shot in the parking lot of the Gable Park 17 in the P1.
Okay, sir, I need an address.
The audio on that 911 call is a little difficult to understand. But the caller says that he had just witnessed a shooting in the parking garage of his apartment building. He heard someone screaming, followed by a loud noise. Then he saw the woman who had been shot, lying on the ground outside of her car. The people who did it, he said, had been driving a black Jeep Cherokee. Dallas police officers and paramedics responded to the apartment complex parking garage in Uptown Dallas, Texas. When they arrived at the scene, they found a woman lying just outside of her white Toyota Camry, the driver's side door still slightly open. One of the paramedics immediately attempted CPR, as he would later recall in court.
We arrived on scene. We didn't really have any direction. We just knew it was in the parking garage. And so immediately we had all of our equipment and we started walking around trying to find where it was. We couldn't find anybody. I believe it was an officer on a bicycle who found the victim and brought us over to her. And when we found her, initially she was, the driver's side door was open and she, her upper part of her body, her torso, she was laying on her back, was underneath that door. When we realized that she wasn't breathing, we noticed there was some trauma. We slid her back maybe about a foot just for us to get to her so we could start working.
Could you tell at that time that it was a gunshot?
We did see a trauma wound here in her chin, but that was all we saw. And we did see some blood on scene.
And did you begin to try and treat?
We did. For about 30 seconds, like I said, we moved her where we would have access to her. I believe we closed that door, the driver's side door. Partner started compressions. I got an IV access pretty quick. I think maximum time of working was about a minute before we realized there was more blood coming from around the back of her head.
What made you realize that?
Well, as he was doing compressions, blood was recirculating, and we noticed there was a lot of flow coming from behind the patient. That's when I took my hand, reached back behind, felt the wound in the back as well. And at that time, we did see some matter and some signs incompatible with life, so CPR ceased at that time.
The woman had been shot in the head and was already deceased. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 66. Police officers closed off the area and set up a perimeter. They learned that the deceased woman was 35-year-old Kendra Hatcher, who lived in the attached Gables Park 17 apartment building. Kendra lived alone and was a pediatric dentist, with an office about 10 miles away. She had apparently just been coming home from work when someone shot and killed her. Kendra's cell phone was on the ground, right near her head, but her purse and wallet seemed to be missing. Still, officers thought it was a strange place for a robbery, inside a closed residential parking garage. They interviewed Hashim Saad, the guy who had made that 911 call. Hashim told them that he lived with his dad in the Gables Park 17 apartments. He and his friend had just gone down the elevator and entered the parking garage when they heard screaming, followed by gunshots. He told the detectives that he saw a black Jeep Cherokee that seemed to have been involved in the shooting leave the garage, which is when he called 911. While the officers worked to get a hold of the garage's surveillance cameras, they got notification from the building's concierge, who told them that Kendra's boyfriend was in the lobby, trying to get into her apartment. When they got up to the lobby, they found a very distraught-looking man named Ricky Paniagua, who had just received the news that Kendra had passed from the concierge. Ricky told the officers that he and Kendra had been dating for the last 4 months and that they were supposed to leave on a trip to Mexico the following day. Ricky had been inside Kendra's apartment, waiting for her to get home from work, when he left to go get something to eat. It was now around 9:30, and he had come back to Kendra's apartment, having a bad feeling that something was wrong when he saw the police presence and hadn't heard back from her. He said he had no idea who would have wanted to hurt her. Officers pulled the surveillance video, and just as Hashem had described, they saw a black Jeep Cherokee entering the garage at 7:17 p.m. and exiting at 7:44 p.m., immediately after the shooting. The Jeep had damage to its front hood and had paper tags. The video was fuzzy, but they could just make out what looked like a female in the driver's seat. They appealed to the public for help and explained that they wanted to talk to whoever was inside that Jeep Cherokee.
It's our understanding that last night about 7:45, our victim, Miss Kendra Hatcher, a white female, 35, arrived home at the Gables Park 17 apartments in the 1700 block of Cedar Springs Road. At some time before she arrived, we believe a vehicle of interest entered that same parking garage by piggybacking or following another vehicle in through the gate. And that vehicle parked and waited in a parking space. The vehicle, which is shown on the screen from surveillance video, is described as an older model Jeep Cherokee. It's got faded paint on the hood and a paper buyer tag. When Ms. Hatcher parks her car, an individual gets out of the vehicle of interest, walks in her direction. Witnesses then describe hearing a gunshot. Very quickly thereafter, that individual gets back into the vehicle of interest, and that vehicle then leaves the parking garage.
The images from the surveillance video were circulated around the area and beyond. National news picked up the story, and everyone wanted to know who had murdered this well-liked pediatric dentist. People on various online forums scrutinized the photos, some even swearing that they could see a figure in the back seat, too. But one person who saw the photos on the news, Jose Luis Ortiz, was shocked when he saw the damage on the hood of the Jeep Cherokee. He noted that it looked eerily similar to that on his own vehicle. So similar that he was convinced that the Jeep that had been involved in the Uptown murder was his. He called the Dallas Police Department and told them that he was the owner of the Jeep in the photos. But he told them that he hadn't been the one driving it that day. He said he had loaned it out to one of his friends. The friend Jose had loaned his car out to agreed to speak with detectives, but she told them that she hadn't driven the car that day either. She said that she too had loaned out the car to one of her friends, 23-year-old Crystal Cortez. Crystal Cortez was a dental assistant who lived in the area, but despite her profession, detectives couldn't figure out how exactly Crystal knew Kendra or if she knew Kendra. On September 4th, just 2 days after the murder, Crystal voluntarily came into the police station. The lead detective on the case, Detective Eric Barnes, read her Miranda rights, and Crystal said she would voluntarily give a statement. The following is what was recorded in the police report. Crystal admitted to Detective Barnes that she was involved in what happened to Kendra, only it wasn't what police had thought. She said that she, along with who the report calls Person B, and the shooter, who she said was a man named Chris, had all conspired not to murder Kendra, but to rob her. She said Person B paid her $500 to be the getaway driver. She was to pick up Chris, whom she said she had not met before, drive him to the parking garage, and then leave with him after he committed the robbery. But things didn't go as planned. She said after they were parked in the garage, they saw Kendra pull in and park. Chris got out of the car, and a short time later, she heard a gunshot. Chris then came back to the car with two purses in his hand and hopped into the back seat. She said they then left the parking garage and she dropped Chris off at an intersection in Dallas. Crystal said she then met up with Person B, who then took possession of one of the purses. Crystal said the deal was that she and Chris would get paid after Crystal showed Person B Kendra's driver's license as proof that the robbery had been carried out. She told Detective Barnes that she had never met Kendra and had only met Person B the month prior. She gave them a description of what Chris looked like. She said he was a black male with skinny dreads and had a scar on his hand. She said she had no idea that he was going to shoot Kendra. After Crystal gave her statement, she was officially arrested and charged with capital murder. She was held on a $500,000 bond. Her brother spoke to reporters after her arrest and said there was no way she robbed anybody. She was just the driver. I don't know if she knows what she was doing or if she got threatened to do it, he said. It was clear that Kendra's family didn't believe Crystal's account. Her aunt told reporters that it wasn't a robbery, that there would have been no reason for a robber to kill Kendra just to get her stuff. There were still so many unanswered questions. Would authorities be able to find Chris, the alleged shooter? And who was Person B? As the investigation continued, a new theory emerged. Search warrants released to the public revealed that police were particularly interested in someone they had actually talked to in the very beginning, Jose's friend, who had admitted to lending Crystal the car. Her name was Brenda Delgado, and she was just the connection police had been looking for. She was the ex-girlfriend of Kendra's new boyfriend, Ricky. Brenda Delgado was 33 years old and was a dental hygiene student at Sanford Brown College. She and Ricky had dated for 2 years, but had broken up earlier in the year. According to the search warrants, Brenda was Person B. She was the one Crystal alleged had paid her $500 to be the getaway driver and had paid the shooter, Chris, to supposedly rob Kendra. Police also stated in the warrants that Crystal had told them that Brenda had been following Kendra prior to the murder and that she had been using an iPhone to track her movements. Investigators searched Brenda's apartment, which was located less than 2 miles away from where Kendra was killed. They stated in the warrant that they were looking for firearms, computers, electronic devices, bloody clothing, and items belonging to Kendra. But the only item they seized was a laptop computer. Right around this time, the Dallas Morning News ran a story saying that one of Brenda's friends told them that Brenda was distraught over the fact that Ricky had recently taken Kendra home to San Francisco to meet his family. She was so upset, according to this friend, that Brenda wanted to postpone her upcoming licensing board exam. He also said that among their close group of friends, everyone knew that Brenda was obsessed with Ricky. The Dallas Morning News also spoke to a couple of Kendra's friends who said that Kendra was excited about her relationship with Ricky, but that she never mentioned anything about an ex-girlfriend. They said Kendra had just posted photos from their trip to San Francisco on Facebook a week prior to her murder. On September 29th, 2015, 4 weeks after Kendra's murder, detectives interviewed Crystal again. This time, Crystal provided more details. She told them that in the days leading up to Kendra's death, she overheard Brenda asking someone if he knew of someone that could take care of something for her, and that person responded that he could. She said she believed that person had put Brenda in touch with Chris. She also gave more details about what she said went on inside the Jeep before and after the murder. As she and Chris were sitting in a parking spot waiting for Kendra, she asked him how much Brenda was paying him, and he told her it was none of her business. Then afterwards, she said Chris threatened her. He told her that if she told the police anything about him, that she and her 6-year-old son would be next. She gave the detectives a description of the car that Chris normally drove, a blue Chrysler Sebring, and gave them the phone number she had gotten from Brenda that she believed was Chris's cell phone. Crystal then also confirmed the motive. She said Brenda had been upset that Ricky had taken Kendra to San Francisco to meet his family. But she reiterated that she thought that Kendra was only going to be robbed, not killed. 3 days later, on October 2, 2015, exactly 1 month after Kendra's murder, Dallas police announced that they had Chris in custody.
Within the last 48 hours specifically, detectives have been working around the clock, executing search warrants and interviewing individuals in connection with the offense. Tonight, we announce the arrest of Christopher Love, black male, date of birth 3/23/1984. He is the person we have identified as having shot Dr. Hatcher. He has been charged with capital murder and a federal charge of unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon. He is currently in the Dallas County Jail on $2.5 million bond.
But that wasn't all.
Additionally, we have secured a warrant for the arrest of Brenda Delgado, Latin female, 6/18 of 1982, also for the charge of capital murder for her involvement in the offense.
He told the reporters that it was a murder for hire. And then he dropped another bombshell. They didn't seem to know where Brenda was.
Delgado in custody?
No, not at this point.
Do you know where she is?
I won't discuss or speculate as to where she might be, or all I will suggest to her specifically is that she turn herself in as quickly as possible.
Do you believe she's evading arrest at this point?
She is a fugitive, wanted at this point for capital murder.
Brenda Delgado was a fugitive, having left town right after her initial interview with investigators. Even though Brenda had skipped town, a grand jury went ahead and indicted her for capital murder. According to the indictment, Brenda had hired Christopher Love to kill Kendra, paying him in money and drugs from a Mexican drug cartel. And if that wasn't enough, in April of 2016, after 6 months of being on the run, the FBI added Brenda to the FBI's 10 most wanted list, offering a $100,000 reward for her capture. This made her the 9th woman to ever be added to the list. They noted that she had ties both in Texas and in Mexico, where she was actually a Mexican citizen. By adding her to the list, the FBI said that it underscores the violent and calculative nature of the crime she's accused of committing. A special agent from the FBI's office in Dallas released a statement saying that although she didn't pull the trigger herself, she's still responsible for the murder. Just 2 days later, authorities got their wish. Brenda was apprehended in Mexico. As part of the United States' extradition agreement with Mexico, she would not be facing the death penalty. In October 2016, the extradition was complete, and Brenda was returned to custody in Dallas to face her charges. Brenda's attorney, George Milner, told reporters that Brenda had fled because she knew she would face the death penalty and couldn't afford to hire an attorney. He said she turned herself into the Mexican authorities as soon as her family had raised enough money to help her with her defense. But he maintained that his client was innocent. And one thing in her favor, he said, was the fact that detectives had talked to her for hours after the murder, and it still let her walk out the door. Christopher Love, the alleged shooter, was the first to go to trial. And although they couldn't seek the death penalty for Brenda, prosecutors did decide to seek the death penalty for Christopher. In his opening statements, prosecutor Kevin Brooks said that Kendra met Ricky, a dermatologist, in May of 2015, and that their relationship really took off. But unfortunately, he said, there was one thing in Ricky's past that Kendra didn't know, which was no fault of either of them. He said that earlier that year, in February 2015, Ricky had ended a 2-year on-and-off relationship with a woman named Brenda Delgado, and evidence will show that Brenda could not let it go. She followed him, showed up where he took salsa classes and where he went jogging, and she also stalked him online. She hacked into his Facebook and cell phone. and then she started following the women that he dated. He said when Brenda found out about Kendra, she was extremely upset. She very quickly decided that she wanted Kendra killed because she wanted Ricky back. She approached several people to see if they would kill her. He then outlined a much different story than what Crystal had told the detectives. He said in August 2015, Brenda recruited Crystal into helping her kill Kendra. Crystal agreed to do it, and so every single day for 2 weeks, they followed Kendra. And it was through Crystal that Brenda met Christopher Love. At the very first meeting, Brenda asked Christopher if he would kill Kendra. He said yes, in exchange for drugs and money. He then joined them in following Kendra, and on September 2, 2015, in murdering her. The next day, there was a ton of publicity about the murder, which they did not expect. Crystal and Christopher were in a panic, while Brenda calmly told them that she was going to flee to Mexico. Prosecutor Brooks told the jury that Christopher admitted to knowing Crystal and Brenda and admitted to owning the gun that killed Kendra. He admitted to being there, but says that he was not the shooter. He played for the jury a phone call between Christopher and his girlfriend while he was in jail. At one point, she asks him why he didn't get rid of the gun. He says, "I don't know, just being stupid." She says, "If you shot that lady, you should have gotten rid of the gun." And he responds, "I know, I know." Prosecutor Brooks promised to prove their case with witness testimony, forensic evidence, and common sense. The defense declined to give an opening statement, and so the state called their first witness, Kendra's mom, Bonnie. Bonnie told the court that Kendra was one of 5 children. She had 4 sisters and 1 brother. She said their family is very close. When describing Kendra, she said that Kendra loved working with kids at her pediatric dental practice and that the kids loved her right back. Bonnie recalled how Kendra had told her family that she had met someone, Ricky, who she was head over heels for. On the Monday before her death, she said Kendra had booked a flight and was bringing Ricky to meet them. She said Kendra was really anxious to bring him to meet their family. Bonnie then described how she heard about her daughter's death. Her husband was working out of town that night, and she heard her cell phone ring, then heard her doorbell. She could hear someone yelling, "Bonnie, Bonnie, open the door." She looked out and saw her son-in-law and daughter.
My oldest daughter was out in the car. She was hanging out the passenger side. And so I ran to the door, and they, Jeff came in, and I'm like, "Oh my gosh, what is wrong?" And I thought it was my husband. And they're like, my daughter came in. She's like, "Mom, just sit down on the couch." And I'm like, "Tell me what's wrong." And it took them 2 hours until my husband got home to tell me what had happened.
They told her that Kendra had been shot and that she didn't make it. She said that's all she remembers, but that she remembers that part so well. She then ran outside and screamed. She couldn't believe that her daughter was dead. The man who called 911, Hashim Saad, told the jury that he lived in the Gables Park 17 apartments with his father at the time of the shooting. He said that on September 2, 2015, he was going to go get his hair cut at about 6 or 7 that night. He had a friend with him.
We just came down an elevator like any other day. Once we came out, just immediately you heard screaming, but it didn't sound like human. It sounded more like an animal. So obviously we're going to be looking over in that direction. And all you hear is a pop, pop, which is 2 shots, and then it's just quiet. So once we heard those 2 pops, we ran to our vehicle, got in the car. By that time, the vehicle that was up top of the parking lot, it came down, took a left, and then went back around. By that time it got behind us, we pulled out, and no, go ahead, sorry.
let's break that down a little bit. So as you exit the elevator doors, you hear a gunshot?
No, we hear screaming. That's the first thing. That's the first thing.
And when you say it didn't sound like human screaming, what?
Like she was out of breath, basically. Like she was that scared to where she couldn't really scream, where she was out of breath, basically.
And then the next sounds you hear, did you immediately recognize those to be gunshots?
Oh, yeah, immediately, because it's two pops. What else could that be in a parking garage?
And what's your response to hearing those gunshots?
Straight to the car.
Why?
Just, there's nowhere else to go. There's just safety.
And as you go straight to the car, what do you see?
We got in the car, turned the car on. The car that was up on the first level begins to come down. It takes a left, so it's coming behind me. Okay. Well, go ahead.
Let me stop you there. That car that's coming down, mm-hmm. you said it's on the next level.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at the bottom level of the parking garage.
Yes, sir.
And is there a ramp that goes up to the next level?
Yes, sir.
Is that ramp there, is that where you saw the vehicle you're describing?
Yes, sir.
What kind of vehicle was that?
To be honest with you, I can't recall, but if I were to, it would be maybe a Jeep Cherokee.
And what do you see that Jeep Cherokee do?
I didn't see it. All I heard it, but what I saw was him coming down really fast. His tires screeched. He came down, took a left. Once he was behind me going past me, that's when I pulled out, and then he went to the left of the parking lot like this in a square and became behind me, and that's when I started going out.
Are you pulling out of your parking space like, in an effort to get away from this Jeep?
Yes, sir.
And why are you concerned about the Jeep?
Because you don't know what they could do. They could fire at you. They could fire the gun. You just don't know any situation could happen at that moment.
He immediately called 911 after exiting the garage. They told him to go back there and talk to the police, and so he did. On cross-examination, Hashim was asked about the description he gave on the 911 call, which was played in court. In the phone call, he says the suspect was a white male. He had also said he only heard one pop. Hashim responded that it happened 3 years ago, and so he couldn't be positive about some of the details. Larry Splon, the security director for the building next to the Gables Park 17 apartments, testified about video surveillance they had in their parking lot. A video was played for the jury from that vantage point. Just past their own parking lot, you could see the parking garage for the Gables apartments. At 7:42 p.m., a white vehicle drives through the Gables garage. As soon as the white vehicle passes, a figure can then be seen walking down the Gables parking ramp towards where the white car went. About 25 seconds go by, and then a black vehicle starts reversing out of a nearby parking spot. The figure walks back over to the black vehicle, and the vehicle then drives down the ramp. A clearer view of the black vehicle emerges as it passes by. Splon identified it as a black Jeep Cherokee. Abe Daniel Santiago, a crime scene analyst with the Dallas Police Department, responded to the Gables Park 17 apartments for the call of a homicide. He said he was debriefed by officers already on the scene, and then he started taking photos as he approached. He described Kendra's body.
Noticed a white vehicle, and on the driver's side of the vehicle, which was away from me, as I passed the vehicle, I then saw a body laying on the ground next to the vehicle.
His photos were shown to the jury. There was a red mark, presumably blood, on the passenger door handle, and a fired cartridge casing on the passenger side floorboard of the vehicle. The driver's side door was slightly ajar, and Kendra was lying deceased on the ground, a loaded pistol magazine by her left foot, a fired bullet fragment a little further up, and a cell phone by the left side of her head. Santiago said they processed the black Jeep Cherokee a little over a week after the murder. They found a receipt in the center console between the driver and passenger seats. The receipt was from Sonic America's drive-in at 3:53 p.m. on the day of the murder. The purchased items listed were 6 corn dogs and high-C punch. Dr. Rosie Singh, also a pediatric dentist, testified that Kendra was one of her best friends. She said she heard from Kendra on the day she died because she had borrowed her waterproof camera a while back and Kendra now needed it back. She said Kendra was leaving to go on vacation the next day with Ricky, and she wanted to use it while they went scuba diving. Dr. Singh said she wasn't home at the time, but she arranged with her doorman to let Kendra in when she came to get it. When she eventually got home, days later, she noticed something that Kendra had left for her in her apartment. It was a note.
Looking at the original, would you read to the jury what that note says?
The note says, thank you, sister friend. You're the best. Hope you had a great trip home. See you soon this week. Love you, Kendra.
She didn't see the note until after she had attended Kendra's funeral. When asked what she knew about their relationship, Dr. Singh said that Kendra and Ricky had a lot in common and really connected. She said Kendra was very, very thrilled about the relationship and that Ricky was the love of her life. We'll get into more testimony, including from Ricky Paniagua, Kendra's boyfriend and Brenda's ex-boyfriend, right after this quick break from today's sponsors. If we care about the ingredients in the food we eat and the beauty products we use, why shouldn't the same be true of our feminine care products? Did you know that the FDA doesn't require brands to disclose a comprehensive list of ingredients in their feminine care products, so most of them don't? Well, Lola offers complete transparency about the ingredients found in their tampons, pads, liners, and wipes, all of which are 100% organic cotton with no added chemicals, fragrances, synthetics, or dyes. Plus, with Lola's customizable subscription, you get to choose your mix of products, mix of absorbency, number of boxes, and frequency of delivery. And you can even change, skip, or cancel at any time. I've been using Lola for quite a while now, and not only is it easy and convenient to order, but the thought of going back to a company that adds unknown chemicals to their products is not something I'm ever willing to do again. The 100% organic cotton, BPA-free tampon applicators leaves me worry-free each month. And Lola lets me customize my order with exactly what I know I'm going to need, so I don't have the extras of what I don't. For 40% off all subscriptions, which is an amazing deal, visit mylola.com and enter COURT40 when you subscribe. That's mylola.com, MYLOLA.com, and enter COURT40 for 40% off all subscriptions. Kendra's boyfriend, Ricky Paniagua, took the stand next. It would be the first time the public would hear from him since Kendra was killed. He testified that he's a dermatologist who now lives and works in California. He was asked by the prosecutor how he knows Brenda Delgado. He said they dated from the fall of 2012 to the summer of 2014. They ended the relationship then, but then started dating again from November 2014 through February 2015. He was then asked if he knows Brenda's mom, to which he said yes. He said Brenda's mom had started a housekeeping business, and so she cleaned his house for him. After he and Brenda stopped dating, she continued to be his housekeeper for a few months. He was asked if Brenda's mom had access to his apartment, and he said yes, even when he wasn't home. In fact, he said he typically wouldn't be home when she was there. After their relationship ended, he said he and Brenda remained platonic friends and would text each other. He then described a few instances where he ran into her out in public after their relationship had ended.
Were there also times where you would find yourself someplace and all of a sudden there's Brenda at the same place?
Yes, that did happen on occasion. That happened reasonably often at the I would go running at the Katy Trail, and sometimes while I was running in one direction, she would be running in the opposite direction. Another time when I was at a restaurant in the Dallas area with a female companion, and she also kind of presented herself to the same location. Those were kind of off the top of my head right now.
And at the time, did you think anything untoward was taking place, or these were just mere coincidences?
I just thought of it as coincidence.
He testified that he met Kendra in May 2015 through an online dating site. Their first date was on May 24th to a restaurant called the Cozy Kitchen. He said things progressed quite rapidly and they became exclusive from the end of May until the day she died. He told the jury that he and Kendra went on several trips together, including three to California. One for his 20-year reunion, another one for work, and a third for his cousin's wedding. During that time frame, he and Brenda remained friends and would still text each other. He said Brenda even helped him find someone to fix his truck. He told the court that she presented herself as just wanting to be friends. Kendra died on a Wednesday, and that following Thursday, the two of them were supposed to go to Cancun together for about 4 days. On the day she died, he said he and Kendra both worked. She typically worked a little later on Wednesdays, until about 7 p.m. After he was done with his work, he went to his apartment, got some of his items, and then took an Uber to Kendra's apartment around 5 p.m. Around 6 p.m., he went running for about an hour. He then went back to Kendra's, showered, and got ready. He said Kendra sent him a text message letting him know that she was on her way home, a little before 7 p.m. Then, about 20 minutes later, she sent another text that said she was going to go to her friend Rosie's apartment to pick up the underwater camera. They continued to text. Then, a little after 7:30, she said she was on her way again. Another 20 minutes went by and he hadn't heard from her, so he texted her, asking if she had eaten anything yet and seeing what she wanted to do for dinner. He didn't hear back from her. At that point, he said he noticed that the text message he was sending her didn't go through. He said that would often happen if she was on the phone, so he assumed that she was just talking to someone. After he didn't hear back from her, he texted her around 8 p.m. that he was going to go out and get some food. When he left, he said he noticed police vehicles blocking the entrance to the building's parking garage. He text messaged Kendra to let her know that there was a lot of commotion going on in front of her parking garage and that she wouldn't be able to get in that way. He got his food and then went back to his apartment while he waited for her. A little after 9:30, he headed back to Kendra's.
When I came back to Kendra's apartment, it was kind of how I typically do it, you know, just kind of enter through the double doors of her complex and get buzzed into the front desk by the concierge. And then they would, you know, typically they would be, they would bring me to the elevator area to bring me upstairs. And
what was different this time?
So this time, I asked if I could be, I was brought to the front desk and I was asked if I can get buzzed up to Kendra's apartment. And then the concierge, John, he held up his hand and he said, "Hold on." And that's the moment when everything just kind of started coming together as far as, you know, the police vehicles not being able to get a hold of her. I mean, now I'm thinking worst case scenarios, and I'm just repeating myself. You know, where's Kendra? Where's Kendra? I need to see her. You know, please, you know, buzz me up to her apartment. I was texting her. I said, you know, they're not letting me up to your apartment. Please let me in. And then that's when they brought me to the back area of the concierge front desk, and team of investigators and police officers were there,
So the first time you heard what had happened, it was from a police officer, law enforcement?
No, actually, it was the concierge. It was John. He was the one that actually, because I kept asking repeatedly, you know, is Kendra okay? Is Kendra okay? Is she still? And then I became even more specific. I said, is she still alive? And John said, "No, I'm sorry, Kendra passed."
Ricky was shown photos of Kendra and him together that Kendra had posted on Facebook and that he also had on his Facebook page. The prosecutor asked if he knew of any reason why those photos would be on a phone belonging to Brenda Delgado, and he said no. Before he started dating Kendra, he said he dated a registered nurse named Merlandi. They dated for about 2 months, from March to May 2015. They took a trip to Denver, Colorado for his birthday weekend in April. The prosecutor showed him screenshots of a text message conversation that appeared to be between him and Merlandi, presumably from his phone. The prosecutor then also showed him screenshots of the email confirmation he had received for his reservation on Frontier Airlines from that Denver trip, as well as a receipt for the trip. Any reason why any of these would or should be on Brenda's cell phone? The prosecutor asked. Ricky said no. Ricky said he never talked specifically about Kendra to Brenda. He had let Brenda know that he was in a relationship and that it was going well. He said he has no reason to believe that Kendra and Brenda had ever spoken to each other. He told the jury that he and Kendra communicated a lot, both on his phone and on his computer. If someone had access to his cell phone, email, or Facebook, they would have been able to see that he and Kendra had been planning a trip. Ricky testified that both he and Kendra realized their relationship was something special, and that in August, less than a month before she was killed, they had even started a wedding fund together. Ricky was asked about his cell phone plan he had with Brenda. He said he had been encouraging Brenda to get herself removed from his AT&T plan, a plan they were both on from when they were together. Ricky said he was getting fed up that she wasn't doing it, and so towards the end of August, he contacted AT&T himself, paid off her cell phone, and had her removed from his account. Ricky said he had plans to relocate to San Francisco later that October, and that he and Kendra had discussed her going with him. The defense declined to ask him any questions. Moses Martinez, one of Brenda Delgado's cousins, testified next. He recalled how at one point, Brenda talked to him about how she and her boyfriend had broken up and how she wanted to get back at him and wanted to hurt him. He said every time she talked about it, she was drinking a lot and wasn't in her right mind. But then, after a while, the conversation switched to Brenda wanting to hurt a woman named Kendra.
Now, did she ever talk to you specifically about how she wanted you to do it?
She just said she wanted me to hit her with the bat. And that's when I told her I didn't want to do that. Like, it's not worth hitting someone innocent. I told my uncles. And then that's when we stopped talking because they didn't believe me.
Did you also tell your mom?
I told my mom. And my mom tried to talk to them. But nobody, you know, would expect that. So they didn't believe me because they saw her as an innocent woman that would never do nothing. So after 5 months passed, nothing happened. And then when it did happen, then that's when they started believing me. And
it's a little late then, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The prosecutor held up a bat that had been found in Brenda's car. Moses said Brenda had told him that she had bought it. He said Brenda offered him money and a car to do it, but that he said no. He said she's a part of his family and he's uncomfortable talking about it, but what she did was wrong. There were no questions from the defense. Jennifer Escobar, who also goes by the name of Jennifer Calderon, said she knew Brenda Delgado for years, but that they had been hanging out a lot in August of 2015. Jennifer had just broken up with her boyfriend and needed a place to stay, so Brenda told her that she could live with her. She said she stayed with Brenda for about 2 weeks. Jennifer testified that Brenda talked to her about Ricky all the time. She said Brenda was obsessed with him. In fact, she said Brenda was so obsessed that there were times Jennifer didn't want to come back to the apartment because she didn't want to hear about it. She said Brenda was really controlling and was possessive over Ricky. She told the court that Brenda talked to her about giving her $2,000 plus a car if she helped her with something.
She had several plans. First, it was Ricky, put him in a coma or beat him up, or just eliminate Hatcher.
describe to you how she wanted either of those things to happen?
For Ricky, she had bought a bat, some type of needle. I don't know what it could take. Basically, it's for him to put him in sleep. She wanted to capture, to follow around Hatcher and basically eliminate her.
She said Brenda had so many ideas of how she wanted to kill Kendra, too. One was to confront her at her car, grab her, and stab her with a needle filled with something. And the second was to go and beat her up. She testified that at first she said yes, that she was in a really dark place at the time. But then she decided she didn't want to get involved because she didn't know Ricky or Kendra. In mid-August 2015, Jennifer invited a friend of hers, Crystal Cortez, to come hang out at the pool in Brenda's apartment. That was the first time Brenda and Crystal met. Jennifer said she moved out of the apartment around the 20th of August. She didn't know that Brenda and Crystal had kept in touch until after the murder happened and a family member sent her a news article about it. Roberto Menendez testified that he used to work at a car dealership. He said that in February of 2015, Brenda came into the car dealership with her friend Jennifer, who bought a Nissan Altima. And a month after that, he sold a white Lexus to Brenda. He and Brenda kept in touch, and by April 2015, they were talking and hanging out about every other week. Their relationship never progressed past that, but he said there was a woman that Brenda was constantly talking about, a woman named Kendra Hatcher. One time, he and Brenda went out drinking, and he ended up going with her to Kendra's apartment.
We went to a restaurant on Uptown on a Wednesday night, and we were drinking, and about around 9:30 or 10, she told me, "Hey, I want to visit a friend." "Okay, let's go." And we went to the apartment building of where Kendra lives, the parking lot.
And just so we're clear, for the benefit of the court reporter, are you telling us that on a Wednesday night, y'all went out drinking at a place in Uptown?
Yes.
And at some point that night, she asked to drive to visit a friend?
Yes.
The building that she asked to drive to, did you come to recognize that as the building that Kendra Hatcher lived in?
Yes, on the news, when I saw it on the news.
When you saw it on the news?
Yes.
After this had happened?
After it happened.
He told the court that at one point, he talked to Brenda about her obsession with Kendra.
Do you recall whether or not you ever confronted Brenda Delgado about this obsession with Kendra Hatcher?
Yes, it was in the middle of, I think, July or August, when she was talking about her every time, and I was tired. And I sent a text message to her and say, "Hey, what's wrong with her? Or what's wrong with you?" And she got mad, and she stopped talking to me for around a week. Mm-hmm. But then she didn't say nothing else.
She never responded?
No. Mm-hmm.
On cross-examination, Roberto said that on the night of September 2nd, 2015, at about 8 or 8:30 p.m., he was at a restaurant waiting on Brenda. They were supposed to meet up, but she wasn't there. She then text messaged him around 9:30 and said she was on her way. She showed up with Crystal. Another friend of Brenda's, named Milton Martinez, testified that he too became friends with Brenda in 2015. He was asked if during the time they spent together, if it became clear to him that she had an obsession with something, and he said yes.
She was involved in a triangle.
When you say involved in a triangle, what do you mean by that?
Meaning she was upset in regards to her ex-boyfriend and a current girlfriend, and I guess the current girlfriend of the ex-boyfriend was Hatcher, and the current boyfriend was named Mr. Paniagua.
And she had an issue with that?
Correct.
Did you talk to her about that?
Yes, I did.
And what advice did you try and impart to her?
I said I want nothing to do with that. I said if she took my advice, she should just leave it alone. Whatever she's thinking, just to drop it.
And when you say whatever she's thinking, drop it, was there something in particular that she asked you that made you give her that answer?
Yes. She asked me if I need somebody that can hurt Paniagua and Miss Hatcher. And I said, stop. I don't want to hear anything else you have to say. I said, if we're friends, we're friends. Don't involve me into anything else that you might have.
Did she ever respond to that?
No. She just kept quiet and just went on her business.
Jose Ortiz, a mechanic, testified that he knew Brenda since childhood. He said she used to live in the same apartment complex right across the hall, and she was good friends with his sister. He first met Crystal at her house on September 1st, 2015. Brenda had taken him there to look at a car that needed to be fixed. Then, the next morning, on September 2nd, he said Brenda came into his shop in that car and asked if she could borrow his black Jeep Cherokee to go run some errands. He gave her the keys and she and Crystal left while he continued to work. Later that day, Brenda asked him to meet up with her at Chili's for some drinks and appetizers. While there, he asked her where his Jeep was. She told him that her friend Crystal was driving it. Brenda then walked outside to call Crystal. When she came back, she said that Crystal would go over to his house later and they would exchange cars. The next day, after he got his car back, he said he saw it on the news and he immediately knew that it was his because of the damage on the hood. He identified his Jeep from the surveillance photos in court. When he looked up what had happened, he learned about Kendra's murder with the description of the Jeep police were looking for. He said he contacted police the following day, on September 4th. The next witness walked up to the stand wearing a green-striped prison jumpsuit and handcuffs. She identified herself as Crystal Cortez and told the jury that she has been in jail since September 2015, charged as a co-defendant in Kendra's murder. She then said that just this last Thursday, before trial, she pleaded guilty to murder. Her agreement with prosecutors was that if she testifies in both Christopher's trial as well as Brenda's, she will receive 35 years in prison for her role. Crystal told the court that she first met Brenda through Jennifer Calderon, that they met at Brenda's apartment while Jennifer was staying there. Jennifer and Brenda had a falling out, and Jennifer ended up moving out. But Crystal and Brenda kept in contact and became friends. Crystal said it wasn't long before Brenda started talking about Kendra Hatcher.
She said that Kendra Hatcher, she hated her. She didn't want anything to do with her. She already knew where Kendra lived. She pretty much said that she wanted to do away with Kendra.
Crystal admitted to the court that she had spoken with the prosecutor three times prior to trial and that she hadn't always been truthful. She said that in their last meeting, the prosecutor had told her that he knew she was lying and that he could prove his case without a doubt. She said she then decided, for the first time, to tell the truth about what had happened. And one of the things she told the prosecutor was pretty damning towards herself. She admitted that she had taken part in the planning of Kendra's murder.
Probably 2 weeks after I met Brenda, we started planning this murder. We would follow Miss Kendra. We would stake out her apartment. We would sit in the parking garage. We would follow her from her job to her house. We pretty much just found out her daily routine.
She said she didn't know Christopher Love, but did know a friend of his named Kelly Ellis, who was a friend of her brother's. She recalled first meeting Christopher at her mom's house when he was there with Kelly. She said Brenda pulled her aside while they were there and said she thought that he would be helpful in their plot to murder Kendra. They later left her mom's house so they could talk to him. They went to another apartment complex and told him about their plan to commit a murder that would look like a robbery. They told him that they had been surveilling Kendra, and he agreed to go along with them. She said before the killing, they had about 10 discussions about it. It was agreed upon that she would get $500 for driving, and Christopher would get drugs and money. She said Brenda often tried to make it seem as though she had a lot of money, and often implied that she was connected to the cartel. Crystal walked the jury through their actions on September 2, 2015. She spoke as though she was describing a typical day and not a day where she actively planned to take a human life. First, she said she and Brenda dropped her son off at school, then went to pick up Christopher. They drove to a convenience store where he purchased a black shirt. They then dropped him off at a Jack in the Box restaurant, while the girls went to a mechanic shop to pick up the Jeep and exchange it with Brenda's car. She told the prosecutor that they had initially thought about buying a red Mitsubishi Galant that someone was selling online, and then they would destroy it afterwards. But then they decided to borrow the Jeep instead. After they got the Jeep, they put paper tags on it, and then she and Christopher went back and forth between Kendra's dental office and her apartment. She said they knew Kendra was going to be at home that night because Brenda had been using her iPhone to track where Ricky was. She dropped Christopher off at his apartment and then picked her son up from school. They went to Sonic to get some food for him, and then she dropped him off at her grandma's house before going back to pick up Christopher. She said they were communicating with Brenda via cell phone throughout the day. They drove to Kendra's parking garage and waited outside for a car to go in, and then followed that car inside to an empty parking spot. She said they had done that before, about 12 to 15 times, so they knew what they were doing and where Kendra usually parked. She was driving while Christopher was in the back seat, lying down because he didn't want anyone to know he was there. She said they never suspected that there would be cameras in the garage. They sat there for about 30 minutes to an hour. At some point, she saw Kendra's car come through the garage.
Who notices her first?
I do.
And when you see her, what do you do?
I tell Christopher Love that Kendra's car is coming in.
And in response to that, what does he do?
He gets up out from the back seat and he gets the gloves and he gets the pistol and he exits the vehicle.
What was he doing before? While y'all were waiting for her to get there?
He was laying in the back seat.
Was he doing anything else?
No, sir.
And when she gets there, was he on the passenger side or driver's side back seat?
He exited the driver's side back seat.
And what does he do next?
He exits the vehicle and I hear Kendra scream, "Help, help, help me." And then I hear the shots fired and I back up out of the parking space that I was in, and he enters the vehicle. I go down the ramp because I thought there was another exit, but there wasn't. So I had to turn back around and exit through the main entrance.
When they left, she and Christopher went to an abandoned house nearby and cleaned the car with disinfectant wipes. They had put stolen paper tags on the Jeep prior to the murder, and so they took those tags off. They then cleaned the car for about 5 to 10 minutes. Afterwards, she and Christopher went back to his apartment. She dropped him off and went and picked up her son. Brenda then called her about 8 or 9 and asked if the pass was complete, meaning did Christopher commit the murder, and she told her yes. Brenda then gave her Jose's address so she could return the Jeep. She said Christopher still had the gun. The prosecutor, presumably to show that they had evidence corroborating Crystal's story, then showed surveillance footage from Jose's neighbor's house. Crystal explained to the jury what they were seeing. Crystal and her son were in the Jeep when Brenda and Jose pulled up behind her. She said she put all the evidence, the gloves, paper tags, what Christopher had been wearing, into a bag. She also had a hoodie with a skeleton mask on it that she had been wearing during the crime. Crystal could be seen giving Brenda a bag, and Brenda then looked through it. She said Brenda told her not to tell Jose what had happened, and then she put one of Kendra's purses, a a Coach purse, around her shoulder. Crystal said that Christopher ended up taking the other purse. When they left Jose's, Crystal and Brenda went to Crystal's grandmother's house back in Dallas and burned Kendra's belongings, along with the paper tags and Christopher's clothes, in the backyard. The prosecutor then showed Crystal two photos. In the first one, Crystal and Brenda are sitting in Brenda's Lexus. Crystal is smiling into the camera, and Brenda is in the driver's seat behind her. The photo was taken after the murder. In the second photo, it's the same setting, but the photo itself is a close-up of a stack of money in Crystal's hand. Crystal was holding it up in the shape of a heart. She told the court that that was the money Brenda had given her for driving the getaway car. The next day, Brenda told her about all of the news coverage. She said they didn't think that it was going to be so big. She said they were getting worried. Brenda told her that she was going to flee to Mexico, but she didn't have a plan. They went to Christopher's apartment to give him his money, and he was worried too. That's the last time she saw Brenda. According to Crystal, she, Brenda, Christopher, and Christopher's friend, Kelly Ellis, planned the murder, and they did the majority of the planning at Christopher's apartment. She said they came up with several plans.
Tell the jury, what were the several plans?
One of the plans were to inject her with the needle. Another plan was to shoot her directly. And another plan was to kidnap her.
And did Mr. Love have a plan that he preferred?
He pretty much said that it would be easier just to kill her with the gun.
They considered doing it at Kendra's dental office, and she described sitting at the Salvation Army across the street, watching her. One time, it was her, Brenda, Christopher, and Kelly. Another time, it was just her and Christopher. And another time, it was just her and Brenda. On September 1st, the day before the murder, they did a practice run. At this point, she said it had been decided that Kelly would no longer be a part of it.
We were supposed to follow her from her apartment to her job, and we basically did that, and we went back to her apartment.
Do you remember the time frame that y'all did this?
I do not, sir.
Do you remember who's front seat, back seat, passenger, driver?
Yes, Brenda was the driver, I was in the front seat, and Christopher Love was in the back seat.
And why wasn't Kelly part of this practice run? Kelly Ellis?
Because we excluded him in the practice run.
Why?
Because he was sloppy in his work.
Talking too much?
Yes, sir.
Was there a concern that Kelly Ellis would say something that would get out?
Yes, sir.
Did Mr. Love share that concern with you?
Yes, sir.
She said Christopher was the one who had the gun. She saw it on two different occasions, and she identified a photo of it in court. She testified that it was her idea for him to wear gloves while he handled the gun, and also her idea to try to get a silencer for the gun beforehand. She said the plan was for it to be a murder that looked like a robbery. He was supposed to take her belongings, her purse and cell phone, and kill her at the same time. 2 days after the murder, the police brought her into the station. She admitted to giving them several different stories. In one version, she said she had been driving and someone jumped into her car. In another, she said someone had told her that they knew where she lived if she didn't go along with it. But she eventually admitted that she did know who the shooter was. She gave them a description of Christopher's car, a Sebring she had seen him driving before. And then another time she described him as having dreads and a scar on his hand. She said she was shown a lineup and that she picked someone out, but that it was obviously the wrong person. A year later, she sat down with prosecutors, and although she gave them more information then, she still wasn't 100% truthful. But on September 21st of this year, 2018, less than a month before the trial, she said she decided to finally tell the truth. She detailed their plan, how they were going to murder Kendra and make it look like a robbery, and how they had followed Kendra every day for 2 weeks. She said Christopher was always aware that the plan was to murder her and that she had offered to be the shooter earlier in the day, but Christopher told her, "You just drive. and I'll do the murder. On cross-examination, Crystal admitted that she never told the same story twice to anyone and that she had given about 40 to 50 hours worth of statements to the police. Crystal said at first she had tried to hide her involvement, but that after her mother died last November, she said she decided to tell the truth. However, a couple minutes later, she admitted that she decided to come forward after her attorney told her that Christopher was going to blame it on her, that he was saying that he had thought that it was going to be a robbery all along and that she was actually the shooter. "It had nothing to do with your mother dying, right?" Christopher's attorney asked her, to which she responded, "That's correct." She also admitted to having told the police that Kelly Ellis was the shooter, which she now says was a lie. She agreed that she told police at least 1,000 times, "I swear to God, I'm not lying to you," and that she was taking the same oath today.
"Your oath doesn't mean anything. All the only thing that means anything to you is saving Crystal Cortez."
"No, sir."
"Well, what means something to you, ma'am?"
"It does mean that there will be justice for Kendra Hatcher."
"Oh, so all of a sudden now you're worried about justice for Kendra Hatcher?"
"Yes, sir."
"When did you start worrying about that?"
When I knew it was the right thing to do."
"And when was that?"
"After I testified."
"After you testified?" "Yes." "Well, you understand you haven't finished testifying yet?"
"Correct."
"Okay. But you've already signed up all your paperwork for your deal?"
"Yes, sir."
And there's no question about this, that you and Brenda Delgado were the two people behind this entire plan. Is that
yes,
right?"
"And Christopher Love, too."
"I'm sorry?"
"Christopher Love was involved in the planning as well."
"Well, from what the way it's been described here in this courtroom, you ought to run through a cast of characters trying to find someone to do your dirty work. Is that right?"
"No."
"Well, you weren't familiar with the other people that was claiming that Brenda was trying to get them to do something?"
"I'm sorry, rephrase your question?"
"Are you familiar with the other cast of characters that are claiming that Brenda tried to get them to do something?"
"Yes, sir."
"Okay, so again, Christopher Love is a footnote in this case. Besides, you claim now that he was the pawn that y'all used to commit this offense."
"He agreed."
"According to you."
Crystal also admitted that you can't see who the shooter is on the surveillance video. Detective Seth Rosenberg testified about searching Brenda's white Lexus. He said there was a shirt on the floorboard in the back and black and blue latex gloves in the back seat, along with a white tank top. On the passenger side front seat were a set of keys belonging to Crystal, and in the trunk were a pair of binoculars and a baseball bat. Cell phone records also played a big part in the state's case. Michael Freeman testified that he analyzed the call detail records from cell phone extractions from the suspect's phones. They didn't find many text messages because he explained that extractions don't show them what had been deleted. But on September 4th, 2015, 2 days after the murder, Christopher Love text messaged Crystal and asked, "What's up with the Kush?" Freeman was able to look at the web history on Christopher's phone, which showed that Christopher was definitely keeping up with the investigation. On September 3rd, 2015, the day after the murder, he searched Google for killings in Dallas, woman murdered in uptown parking garage, gunshots in 75237 zip code, and golden gun swap shops in Dallas. Over the next several days, he continuously clicked on articles about the shooting, including one titled, "Dallas Woman Admits Role in Killing, Unidentified Shooter Still at Large." Another, "Dallas Police ID Woman Slain in Uptown Parking Garage." And another, "The ex-girlfriend of the victim's boyfriend linked to killing in Uptown Garage." He also conducted numerous searches for Dallas homicides and looked at an affidavit from the case that was posted on a local news website. Freeman testified that an image of a pistol was also recovered from Christopher's phone. As for communications between the defendants, Freeman said Brenda, Crystal, and Christopher contacted each other hundreds of times on the day of the murder. And the day after the murder, there were 7 calls from Crystal to Christopher. Freeman was also able to recover images from Brenda's phone that appeared to be related to the case. There were images of Ricky's online dating profile, of Ricky and Kendra together, a screenshot of a text message exchange he had with the woman he was dating prior to Kendra, a photo of an e-receipt for reservations to Mexico that had been sent to Ricky's email, a screenshot of Ricky's phone on a map within the Find My iPhone app, a photo of a red Mitsubishi Galant, and notes from an iPhone with Ricky's email address at the top, along with some letters and numbers at the bottom. Freeman testified that he was also tasked with plotting out the cell tower locations that each phone pinged at on the day of the murder, and both Christopher and Crystal's phones were in the same exact areas at the same times, both near Kendra's apartment. James Thompson, a now retired detective with the Dallas Police Department, testified that he became involved in the case after Brenda fled the country. He said it was rare that something of this stature would take place in that part of town. He said they found Christopher Love after seeing his number appear on both Crystal's and Brenda's phone records. They got a search warrant and pinged his number to find his location. On October 1st, 2015, they went to the area of the phone, which had pinged at an apartment complex in South Dallas. They were accompanied by three FBI agents. They surrounded the area, located Christopher's vehicle, and then decided to sit and stake it out. About 30 minutes went by, and a man matching the description given to police by Crystal got into the car and started driving. The agents kept eyes on him and noticed that the ping of the cell phone was moving along with the car. They decided to approach the vehicle. There were two males, one being Christopher Love, and one female inside. They were all brought into the station for questioning. Detective Scott Sayers testified that a canine dog named Titan was brought in to search Christopher Love's vehicle after he was taken into custody. Titan immediately hit on the center console, up by the windshield, and when they tried it a second time, he went to the exact same spot. Detective Sayers said he noticed that the plastic casing on the glove box looked loose, and so he ripped it off. When he did, he found a loaded gun, the same type of weapon that had been used to kill Kendra. And in fact, a firearms expert then testified that the gun found in Christopher's car matched the fired cartridge casing that had been found in Kendra's car. The lead detective in the case, Detective Eric Barnes, testified about how he first contacted Brenda after Jose had told them that he had loaned her his Jeep. He said he sent some detectives to pick her up and bring her in. She had been studying at a friend's house in nearby Irving at the time. He told the jury that she seemed very prepared for the interview.
Brenda seemed very prepared for the interview. Her story never shifted. She even presented me with the receipt when I questioned her about her whereabouts during the time of the offense. She presented me with the receipt from Chili's. In pristine condition, no wrinkles, no flaws, and just almost prepared for me to ask for that.
Let me stop you there. Did that seem to you a little bit rehearsed?
It did. Most people, I didn't know that I was going to speak to her that day, but she was prepared to talk to me.
Brenda adamantly denied driving the Jeep, instead telling them that her friend Crystal Cortez had been driving it. He said Brenda gave them Crystal's phone number, and so they brought Crystal in next. Crystal seemed overly eager and prepared to talk to them too, but her story fell apart quickly.
Yes, there was a lot of chunks of her story were very unbelievable, and there were certain details in her stories that I knew from watching the video and also just knowing how crimes like this generally occur.
When you say watching the video, are you referring to the video from the parking garage that shows that Jeep coming into the garage, parking, then backing up, exiting the wrong way, and coming back out the way it came?
That's correct.
And the chunks of her story that were falling apart, were those chunks not matching up with what we see on that video?
Yes, sir.
Now, each time she changed her story, would she add something to it?
Yes, she did.
Each time she added something to it, did it really, pretty much for the most part, help corroborate her involvement in the offense?
Yes.
At some point, does she ultimately own up to at least being part of this offense?
Yes, she did.
Does she ever fully give you the entire story?
No, she doesn't.
Does she give you enough to warrant her being arrested for capital murder?
Yes.
Over the next several days, detectives continued to talk to her. She provided them with a description of Christopher Love, but initially said his name was Lamar. It took a couple interviews to get her to admit his real name. After they found the gun in Christopher's car, they interrogated him in an interview that lasted about 20 hours. During that time, Detective Barnes said he tried to build a rapport with him, that Christopher was allowed to use the bathroom, make phone calls, and smoke cigarettes, and that they provided him with really good barbecue food, a blanket, water, and coffee. This was on October 2, 2015, at about 1:50 in the morning. The interrogation video was shown in court. In the video, Christopher was told that his name had come up in a murder investigation that had occurred in Uptown. A dentist named Kendra Hatcher had been killed. Christopher said, "I know I ain't murdered nobody, especially not a white dentist." He was asked if he knew of two females named Crystal Cortez and Brenda Delgado, and he said no. Detective Barnes showed him photos of the two ladies, and he still denied knowing them. Instead, he gave them a description of a Crystal that he did know, which was not the description of Crystal Cortez. A few hours into the interrogation, Detective Barnes allowed Christopher to use his cell phone. He told Detective Barnes that he wanted to go and see his little girl play basketball, and that he cares more about that than a fucking murder investigation. Christopher said he has three kids and that he swears on their lives that he wasn't involved in the murder. He also said he didn't own any guns. But a few more hours into the interrogation, Detective Barnes got notification that the firearm found in Christopher's car was a match to the shell casing found at the murder scene. After he shared the news with Christopher, he said there was a noticeable change in his demeanor. Christopher admitted that the gun was his and that he had bought it from that girl. "What girl?" Detective Barnes asked, and Christopher said, "Crystal." But he said he bought it after the murder had occurred. Detective Barnes told the jury that what Christopher didn't know when he claimed that was that Crystal had already been arrested and was in jail when he said he had purchased the gun from her. At this point, Detective Barnes said it seemed like it was finally settling into Christopher that he wasn't going home. But still, he maintained that he wasn't the shooter. He said he tried to take Kendra's purse, but that she fought back, and so he went back to the Jeep. He was getting in the car, he said, when he heard a gunshot. He blamed it on Brenda and Crystal, saying that he thought he was only supposed to rob her. He said he believed that Brenda was connected to the cartel and asked when they were going to bring her in. "She's the top of the puzzle y'all need," he said. He also said that after the shooting, he couldn't stop thinking about how he was going to get in trouble and that he started drinking twice as much. Detective Barnes told the jury that this was the most planned murder that he had ever investigated, and that he has no doubt that Christopher Love also was involved in the planning. On cross-examination, he was asked about a fourth person being involved, namely Kelly Ellis. And Detective Barnes said that although they believe that a fourth person was involved in the planning, that person has not been arrested, and they don't have evidence of that. Christopher's attorney, Paul Johnson, then said that Brenda was really the one to blame.
And sir, leaving aside for one moment the question of who in fact pulled the trigger, the jury will make that decision. Leaving that side out of the picture for a moment, as you sit there right now, you know as well as anybody in this room that Ms. Hatcher's life was virtually over from the moment that Brenda Delgado decided she was going to ask whoever it took, as long as it took, to find someone to cause her harm, if that's what she wanted, didn't you?
I don't believe that.
Well, she was asking everybody she could think of, wasn't she?
That's correct, but it still had to take someone willing to pull the trigger, willing to take her life for it to happen.
The final witness for the state was the medical examiner, who testified that Kendra was shot once to the back of the head. The exit wound went through her chin, indicating that the shooter was behind her and standing, shooting down. She said the gunshot severed Kendra's spinal cord and that she likely died within minutes. After that testimony, the prosecution rested. The defense decided not to call any witnesses, and they rested too. In their closing arguments, prosecutor Laquita Long said that Christopher met Brenda and Crystal and agreed to kill someone he didn't know on that very same day. She said the final account that Crystal told them is backed by other evidence, and that Christopher's story that he was just going to rob her made no sense. "Do you really need to follow someone every day to snatch a purse?" she asked. She called his story ridiculous and asked the jury to find him guilty of capital murder. In his closing arguments, Christopher's attorney, Paul Johnson, pointed out that the defense doesn't have to prove anything. The state has to prove Christopher's guilt. And there are too many unanswered questions, he said, for a capital murder case. He said the state's case rests solely on Crystal's testimony, that by law, the jury has to believe that what she said is true, and she's just not credible. He also pointed out that the state presented testimony for a day and a half before Christopher's name was even brought up. They failed to prove that he was the shooter, and so he should be found not guilty. The jury deliberated for 2 hours and 20 minutes. They could either convict him of capital murder, convict him of robbery, or completely acquit him. They found him guilty of capital murder. Since the jury found him guilty of capital murder, they now had the task of recommending that he serve either life in prison without parole or be sentenced to the death penalty. At his sentencing hearing, also known as the penalty phase, the prosecution first introduced Christopher's prior criminal record, which included multiple armed robberies. The goal of this was to show that even apart from Kendra's murder, he was still a threat to society. A police officer from Tennessee, where Christopher used to live, testified about pulling him over years prior to Kendra's murder and finding a gun hidden in the carpeting of his car. And prosecutors played more tape from his recorded interrogation, where he talked about how he sells weed and lies about owning a gun. The jury was then shown photos of Christopher's tattoos. One read, "Life or Death," with dollar signs around it. And another was an image of an AK-47 with the words, "One Man Army." Text messages he sent were then displayed on the screen. In one of them, Christopher said he has never felt guilty for anything in his life, except for when he stole money from his mom when he was 11 years old. The state then presented witnesses who testified about who Kendra was. Her sister described her as a giving, driven, intelligent woman who strived for excellence in everything she did. And a friend of hers described how her death has affected so many people. For their part, the defense called several jailers to the stand, who said that Christopher was a peaceful inmate and a model prisoner while at the Dallas County Jail. And they called several family members, his mom, his dad, his brother, and sister. His mom testified that Christopher was a good student until the fifth grade, when she and his father split up. She said they separated about 20 to 30 times as he was growing up, and they split the kids. Christopher would always stay with his dad. During his sister's testimony, Christopher appeared to show a reaction for the first time since the trial began. He stood up abruptly, tripped over his ankle shackles, and tried to leave the courtroom. He was brought back inside and then he cried, while his sister, holding a rosary on the stand, testified that her children loved their uncle and said that he was their first word. Several of his family members apologized to Kendra's family, but Christopher himself decided not to say anything. When the jury made their recommendation, they took about 3 hours before sentencing him to death by lethal injection. Brenda Delgado is still awaiting trial for her role in Kendra's murder. And that's all for today's episode. As always, I'd love to know what you think. Do you think there was enough evidence to convict Christopher Love? And if yes, would you have recommended the death penalty? Do you believe Crystal's testimony at trial? And what do you think Brenda's punishment will be? You can let me know by tweeting me at CourtJunkiePod, emailing me at podcast@CourtJunkie.com, or finding me on Instagram at CourtJunkie. I'd also like to remind you that if you'd like to donate to this podcast, you can do so by going to CourtJunkie.com/support. That will redirect you to my Patreon page, where you can donate as little as $1 a month and get access to early ad-free episodes. Thank you so much for your support. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.